Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. My name is Josh, and I'm your host for the show. I'm an entrepreneur here in Orlando, traveling around, talking with founders, entrepreneurs, people who are building businesses, and those who support the entrepreneurial community. So as audience members listening into the show, our hope is this, is that you see Orlando as a place and get to see the resources and the great opportunities and the great people here in Orlando that are building great businesses, so you could get involved as well. All right. So on today's show, we have the CEO and founder of Archer First Response System, Mr. Gordon Folks. Gordon, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Josh. Glad to be here. Love it.
Yeah, man. So this is really cool. So I love what you're doing because it really helps people. The building process that you're going through and the product that you're building, like, really helps people. So why don't you tell us what Archer First Response Systems is?
Sure. Yeah. So Archer First Response Systems is a deployment platform for unmanned air systems. So unmanned air systems, you can read that or say that as drones, but our technical term is small unmanned air systems. Basically, they're very athletic and agile vehicles, and they can do a lot of cool things. And a lot of people, you know, view them as, you know, something to put a camera on and get a good vantage point, you know, as a camera in the sky. But these vehicles are very capable of doing a lot more than that. But what it comes down to is, you know, how can you deploy them? How can you actually utilize these athletic vehicles to do something? And so that's what Archer is. And Archer is a deployment platform for unmanned air systems, for EMS to deploy medical equipment, actually. So we enable a 911 dispatcher to deploy one of these unmanned air systems to transport an automated external defibrillator for a cardiac emergency, Narcan nasal spray for an opioid overdose. We can carry epinephrine for anaphylactic reactions. So basically, we really help carry some of these layperson first response emergency medical devices, and we get them to the scene very quickly using these athletic vehicles. And we built a kind of seamless and effective platform to enable 911 dispatchers to, you know, at the click of a button, deploy one of these things directly to the scene. And that's what we are. So a lot of people think, you know, we're a drone company, but in reality, we're more of a deployment company than actual drone company. You know, we don't really focus on building the vehicle themselves, but more so enabling that vehicle to be deployed directly to a scene.
Wow. So that's awesome. So I was a firefighter, paramedic. And when I would get a 911 call, when I was riding on the truck, we would all jump in the truck and we would drive to the location and deploy our tools and skills. But what you're doing is essentially taking in a drone or an unmanned, what do you call it?
An unmanned air system, UAS is the acronym Okay. we like to use.
Got it. So you guys take this UAS and you guys deploy that when 911 is dialed, and it drops off a defibrillator or some type of medication for the person there, the layperson, to provide life-saving tools right there, right then, and as fast as it could be. So you're saving lives with drones or UASs.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, we help transport layperson equipment. So we almost, you know, we enable the average citizen to be a hero in a way, because we're transporting equipment that anybody can use. You don't have to be trained on how to use an AED. You don't have to be trained on how to use an EpiPen. You know, you either just, you apply the pad to the patient's chest and you provide a shock to a cardiac arrest victim. Or, you know, you hit someone with an epinephrine pen, or use Narcan nasal spray for an opioid overdose. So a lot of the equipment, because in reality, if it's something that a paramedic needs to apply, then the paramedic will have already been on the scene beforehand, right? So we're getting there before the paramedics, we're getting there before EMS arrives. So we want to bring equipment that any person on the scene right then and there can use to help rescue the victim. And that's what we do.
Got it. That's interesting. So when I was doing this, we were really fast to get to the side, you know, to the patient's side. So give me an example of a time that you might beat, you know, EMS to a scene, you know, if someone's having a cardiac arrest, for example.
Yeah. So basically, in a cardiac arrest situation, we transport an AED over, we can do over 10 square miles in under 3 minutes, which if you think about it, a lot of EMS dispatch times that they provide are, you know, they'll say we can be to X location in 3 minutes. That's what they'll say, which is really good usually, but their timing usually starts the second that their vehicle kind of like leaves the driveway or that they're on the way. And that's when their time starts. Our 3 minutes starts the second that the 911 dispatcher clicks the button to deploy the system, or the second that a victim uses our mobile application to deploy an AED. Their 3 minutes might actually be something more like 5 minutes, and our 3 minutes is straight up like legit 3 minutes from the second you touch that button to the second that AED gets dropped on your feet. It's, you know, we'll be there. So in a situation like that, if you're on a golf course, right, and you're on hole 7 of your golf course, and someone with you has cardiac arrest, current paradigm, you know, you have to call 911, explain the situation, and then maybe they'll call the clubhouse or someone else with you calls the clubhouse, and the clubhouse then grabs an AED, hops on a golf cart, rips out the hole 7, tries to drive there. At the same time, the ambulance is driving down the road trying to get to you, and they're trying to guess what hole you're on and trying to figure out where you are. And it's kind of a big confusing and time consuming process, and there's not really a good standard in getting that AED to you. But with these systems, the EMS dispatcher can, you know, they'll get the coordinates of your phone from the phone call to 911 or through our mobile application, and they can just click a button, and this thing, our multirotor will rip directly to you and drop an AED to you in under 3 minutes. So in those situations, it's just, you know, the time crunch is so life threatening because, you know, after 4 minutes, brain damage is almost guaranteed for cardiac arrest. So in those situations, being able to get an AED directly to where you are, you know, at the touch of a button, is a matter of life and death. And so, you know, we're glad to be able to enable these EMS dispatchers to get to a scene directly and quickly.
Yeah. Wow. So that golf course is a great example. And, you know, I've seen bike trails, nature trails, you know, parks where there's not easy access for an ambulance, a heavy ambulance. So, I mean, it sounds like this is an incredible idea. How in the world did you come up with this?
So I used to just build and fly drones as a hobbyist for a while. You know, I did this for about 6 years. And while I was doing that, you build a drone, you build an unmanned air system, you build a multirotor, and you fly it and you crash it. And then you fly it and you crash it and you fly it and you rebuild it and you crash it and you fly it and rebuild and you crash it. And so you're constantly rebuilding these things, but you get to really know the components of a multirotor when you do that, which is really cool. It's a really cool way to learn how to fly and operate unmanned air systems. And in doing so, you work directly with these components and you watch them kind of evolve as this industry is expanding. And the flight controllers that that run these multi-rotors have become more and more reliable and more robust. And I remember a little while ago, I was flying with my FPV goggles on. I'm sure you've seen those goggles that people wear, like for the drone racing league and all this stuff. So I was wearing these goggles and I was flying in a park in Tallahassee. And I realized that I flew across the entire park. It was this huge park. And I flew across the entire thing in less than 30 seconds. I was flying really fast, but I was like, oh my God, I just traversed this entire huge park in like 30 seconds. That's amazing. So I was like, I wonder what that type of athleticism can be used for, you know, what makes sense, what's the best utilization of that athleticism? And at the same time, there was this open source software called APM Planner, and it was this mission planner software where you could write pre-programmed flight paths and then just change your flight controller to the auto setting, and it would just automatically run this flight path and then come back to you. And I was just blown away by that. I was like, this is so freaking cool. There's got to be something you can do with this. So my college brain was like, oh my God, I can carry beers on a golf course. Like, I'm going to carry beer on a golf course. So in 2013, in early 2013, I founded Sky Caddy LLC. And that was a company that was going to transport beers and chicken fingers and all this stuff on golf courses. And that was my initial thought. I was like, this is amazing. And then I was like, oh, you know what? I'll put an AED on there too. That makes sense. So that way, if somebody like needs an AED on the golf course, they can also order it through this whole platform that they're going to order their chicken fingers from. And then this kind of like light flicked on, and I was like, wait, that's a lot more, that's a lot more of a pressing issue than is, you know, getting chicken fingers to someone quickly. And then so Sky Caddy transitioned into Archer First Response Systems. And then we started really focusing on cardiac arrest and solving that issue and working with first responders. So that was kind of the whole the thought process in there. And it's funny because the technological architecture of the system for Sky Caddy is the exact same thing as Archer First Response Systems. It's just a different payload and a different, you know, vertical and a different reason to activate the system. But it's all pretty much the exact same architecture, which is a very long-winded awesome. Answer.
So you actually started this idea with how can I get junk food to a person on a golf course? And then you switched over to the light side is actually how can I save lives on the golf course?
Yes, that was the natural transition of it all. So this is kind of a interesting for the entrepreneurs out there. So Sky Caddy was going to be a new revenue source for golf courses because they were going to be able to upcharge to deliver out to the golf course through the drone. But that business model requires that the course flies as many times as possible every day. And if you're using a multirotor that say fails 1 in 2,000 flights, but you're obliged to fly as many times as you possibly can, you're likely to hit that failure point quicker than you would if you were using the multirotor for any other purpose. So when it came to, first of all, just physical limitations of the vehicle themselves, you're likely to hit the barrier of failure sooner if you're flying every day, 30, 40 times a day, than you would if you're only flying, you know, 1 or 2 times a month for first response purposes. And at the same time, when it comes to regulatory issues, a lot of times the FAA takes into consideration the purpose of the flight. Like, why are you flying? What is it that you're flying beyond visual line of sight for? And if it's to deliver a six pack of beers to these guys on a golf course, maybe that's not that important. But if it's to deliver an AED directly to someone that's dying and they're going to die otherwise, then, you know, that's a bit more of a reasonable flight.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. So you came up with this idea. You were flying drones as a hobby, right? So you're scraping your beer money together and buying drones and fixing drones and doing it as a hobby and, you know, as a part of your learning process. And you started to see the business application and the life-saving application. How did you go from flying, you know, personal drones to, I'm sure that the drones and the UASs that you're flying for this are a lot more expensive. How did you start your process? How did you afford these things?
Yeah. So, as I was doing this as a hobby, I realized that this is something I want to do for a living. This is something that I'm really passionate about and I want to, you know, put forward and help save lives with. So fortunately, I was at Florida State at the time, Florida State University up in Tallahassee, and they actually started a program called was the application of unmanned air systems within emergency management. So it was like right up my alley. It was exactly what I wanted to do. And the professor, his name was David Merrick. He's this kick-ass dude. So ahead of the game when it comes to utilizing unmanned air systems for search and rescue, for fire, fire scouting and looking at, monitoring control burns. We use them for a whole, I think they even work with dogs. And they do a whole bunch of basically general EMS support with unmanned air systems. I know he helped out with, Hurricane Irma. He flew over to he drove over to Texas, when they had a big hurricane, issue and flooding there. And they do a lot of reconnaissance. So it was just kick ass to have this program right there in the school I was at, working with unmanned air systems. So that was kind of my first step into the legitimate side of structure. Because on the hobby side, it was like, just fly and crash and figure it out and just don't get in trouble and just don't let anybody see you. But with the college and with that program, it was like, very structured, we followed protocol. We worked directly into the standard protocol they had for these other missions. And we were working on how we can integrate unmanned air systems into it. And during that process, not a lot of the students had any stick time or flight time with unmanned air systems. They didn't really know how to build anything. So I was able to bring a lot to the table to that class because, I had already maybe 200 hours of flight time on me at that time. I had built, four or five different multirotors at the time. And so it was great to interact with professors who have been using these things for years, big fixed wing multirotors for surveying, fixed wing unmanned air systems, I'm sorry, for surveying. But so then the transition from the hobby side, I mean, that class is a really great kind of segue into the legitimate side of utilizing unmanned air systems for commercial purposes, for life-saving purposes. And believe it or not, the multirotors that I built as a hobbyist are a lot more difficult to fly than these big, big multirotors that we use for first response. So the whole transition from a skill standpoint of being able to fly and knowing what to do in any given scenarios and how to operate these larger vehicles all actually fed directly out of the hobbyist side of me. But when it came to incorporating that into standard protocols and working with EMS personnel and making it more of a, refined operation came out of that program at Florida State.
Man, that's awesome. Okay, so the ones that you were doing for a hobby were actually a lot more sophisticated or expensive to actually put together, build, and go. So it was actually, an easy path for you because it was easier to fly these other ones. So it's like flying a jet, like a fighter jet versus flying a, commercial airline. It was just very different.
I guess like if I had to make a quick comparison, it would be like, the ones that I was building and flying would be like driving a manual transmission car. And the ones that I fly now for Archer are like driving a Tesla that drives itself. The ones that I were building and flying had all the same sensors. It had barometers for altitude, accelerometers to know how it's sitting in the air, GPS units to know exactly where it is. But you know, to even hover those things, you have to constantly play with the throttle and make sure that you find that sweet spot of where hovering is. Whereas with these newer systems built by DJI and built by these other massive billion-dollar manufacturers, they basically fly themselves. You set them in the air, they stay where they're supposed to be. They're very agile. They're very athletic. They're just super easy to fly. That's why, like, if I teach a lot of people how to fly, and when I do so, I put them on the ones that I build first. I put them on the very hard ones to fly first. Because if you learn, a lot of people learn to fly on DJI, and you learn to fly on a DJI, you're not going to be a very good pilot. You might be able to fly DJI, you know, vehicles very well, but they're the easiest things to fly. If you can fly these hand-built, really hard vehicles with these customized flight controllers, then you're going to be a great pilot. And then when you get on the DJI big multi-billion-dollar manufacturer hardware, then you know you're gonna know what you're doing.
Wow. All right. So you were in school. They actually had a program that was specifically designed for the UAS. And you started to really get into this world of, I can use these tools and these vehicles to save lives. You went on a funding path, right? That is very, you know, very incredible. We were talking about it before the show. Talk to us about your first grant that you received and how did you get it?
So Florida State has what's called the Innovation Center. That's Innovation Center, like the Seminoles. And it was a small business incubator right there at Florida State. And it's part of the Jim Moran Institute. And they actually just opened up the first standalone entrepreneurial college at Florida State, which is pretty unique. So part of that, the small business incubator, is you have access to apply for certain grants. And they had a grant called the Genevia Grant, for technological innovation. And that was actually my catalyst for wanting to join the small business incubator. I had this concept of being able to transport defibrillators with drones. I knew I had some initial R&D costs. And so I went on the Florida State's website to see what sources of funding were available. And I saw this Genevia grant, and it was, you know, you had to be part of the Innovation Center to get it. So I was like, okay, cool. So I applied for the Innovation Center. I went through the whole interview process with Archer, got accepted into the Innovation Center. From there, directly applied, immediately applied for the grant, went through the whole interview process and the whole structure process of getting the grant, and was accepted and awarded that grant. And so that Genevia grant for technological innovation at the Innovation Center was the first bit of funding we ever got in. And that was really the main catalyst of, okay, man, like, this, you had an idea, now you got money, like, figure it out, you know, get it done. So that's really what catalyzed the entire thing. That was our first bit of funding that came in, and that really helped us build some of our, because at this time there were no off the shelf multirotors to do what we were doing. There were no, you know, there was no off the shelf charging platform. There was no off the shelf anything. So we were building everything. So that initial funding went to building some of our first initial prototypes, went to one of our first videos that we actually produced. It's on YouTube still. It's we filmed it at the Florida State golf course. It was this old, you know, I had like a plastic table representing a ground control hub, and we were like flying this cardboard AED around. It was rough, but it looked good. And so that Genevia grant was our first real catalyst to everything.
Okay, so you got some money, and you're like, wow, this is actually real. I just received some money from a grant. Now I've got to, you know, I've got some responsibility, and I got to go, you know, do this more. So you graduated school, and you started focusing on this. You know, what was it like? You know, what kind of conversations were you having with your family or with your friends, like when they're asking you, like, what are you doing? And, you know, what are you doing now that you're graduated?
Yeah, that's definitely a fun question to answer. So when I graduated, I applied for a few jobs. And I got a few jobs, and some of them are decent, you know, decent salary. You know, I would have gotten full benefits, salary, everything. It would have been great and comfortable, and I would have had a normal job. But I had put so much time and effort into Archer, and had it been a company that was, I don't know, doing pretty much anything other than a life-saving service, something that, like, I know for a fact that if these drones are used the way that we designed them to be used, that they're going to save someone's life. Like, if I didn't have that knowledge, then I probably would have stopped and just taken one of those good jobs and just started my professional career right after school. But because I know that if these systems are integrated the way that we've designed them to be integrated, that they will save lives over and over again. Countless times they'll save lives. I can't stop. I've never been able to stop. With that vision in your head and knowing the technology is there, knowing the structure is there, it's just something you can't stop. You have to keep going until it's done. When people ask, you know, what are you doing? I explain, you know, exactly what the startup does, exactly how the system works, why it is that we haven't been able to stop. And a lot of times people get it. You know, it's something that it's unique and it's new. And if I don't do it right now, likely no one will. You know, we've made it very far in the development process. We've made a very detailed and effective architecture for the system itself. And, you know, I think it's something worth pursuing. So it's something that, you know, I've not stopped since I graduated.
Wow. So you're telling your family this, and there, you know, was there any hesitation when you were telling them what you're focusing on? Like when you got this job offer and you talked with, you know, family about it, and what was some of that, some of those conversations? Because I think a lot of entrepreneurs experience this when their family asks, you know, what the heck are you up to? And, you know, this job looks good over here. There's money here, security. You know, nobody wants to see their kids go through all the pains of being an entrepreneur, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it was definitely a conversation that you know, me and my family had to have together. I guess because I started Archer, in 2013, at the end of December of 2013. I think we formally filed the LLC in like March of 2014. So this project isn't anything new to my family. They've known about it. You know, ever since I started it, and they've known how long I've been working on it, and they know, you know, they're aware of it. So when I did go for those few job interviews and I did get accepted those jobs, it was, you know, they explained, like, this is a full-time job. Like, you will be here 9 to 5, 8 to 5. And you likely won't have time to work on your side project or work on your company. And it was funny, like, the job interview required that I give a presentation, and I did the presentation on Archer at this company, and they were like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, why are you here? Like, what are you doing? So I think because, I have been doing it for so long. And I also think that my family sees the vision that I see of this technology. One, because they've actually been out to the demos and they've seen it live, and they're like, holy crap, this thing is actually real. And two, just because I've been so passionate about it for so long, my family and my friends kind of stood behind me and were like, you know, you can take that job anytime. You know, there's gonna be that job somewhere anytime, but there isn't gonna be this thing with as much momentum behind it that you've already put behind it, and so much work that you've already put behind it. You know, that's not an everyday thing that just comes along. So it would be, I don't know, not a waste, but it would be, I don't know, to take something that you're so passionate about and that you've made so much headway with, and there's so much momentum behind, and then just set it on the side table to take a regular job would be, I don't know, just doesn't feel right in my eyes. And at the same time, my whole family has been entrepreneurs. My dad and my mom started a pest control company like 30 years ago. They ran a pest control company for a long time. Now they run a vacation rental company. They've always just been make it your own, you know, make your own way type of people. And so they're very much behind the whole, you know, figure it out and do it yourself type of mentality.
Got it. Now there's a huge leap. And so you got a little bit of funding from the grant that took you only so far, right? There's a huge leap to telling family and friends what you're doing and then asking them for support financially. Did you go through any friends and family rounds or funding rounds to ask them to help you build this?
Yeah. So I had this initial, like very, very like version one of our platform made. And I was like talking to all these like master plan communities and explaining like, we have this amazing life-saving system, blah, blah, blah. I want to show it to you. And this group called Evergreen Lifestyle Management was this management company that manages, I think, over 70 different master plan communities across Florida. And they had their annual meeting, a year ago today on May 4th of last year, May 4th, 2017. And they had this annual meeting and they invited me in as a guest speaker to talk about the system and to do a demonstration. And for me, I was like, I just hit the gold bot. Like, this is the gold mine of master plan communities. This company manages over 70 groups. They're exactly my ideal customers, at the time. And so I was flabbergasted at the opportunity to come and demonstrate our system for 40 different community managers that represent over 70 different master plan communities across Florida. Keep in mind, our break even point was like 3 communities. So when I'm looking at 70 and I'm like, oh my God, this is a huge opportunity. So I have to like nail this presentation. I have to nail this demonstration. So that actual demonstration is what kind of catalyzed our need and our drive to do a family and friends round. Because we had this, you know, I had this multirotor that I built, and it could carry a little defibrillator, but not very well. It was, you know, the vehicle itself wasn't perfect for the system. And the system itself was kind of run through this other different ground control system, and nothing was really put together as well as it could have been. And we didn't even have a ground control hub at all. We had designs for it, but we hadn't anything built. So I knew like for this demonstration, I needed our actual vehicle, like our real deal multirotor that was going to do what we needed it to do. And I needed a ground control hub to show what it looked like. So we did a small family and friends round to really get the ball rolling on both of those pieces of equipment and to get everything ready for this demonstration. We also had, we got Four Rivers catered for everybody too. So that was part of it. Everyone loves Four Rivers. So yeah. And so I think for our family and friends round, because we had, not only did we have like what we were going to spend the money on, but we also had a purpose, like why are you doing this right now? And it was directly like for this demonstration, for this group of people that represent a huge sales opportunity potential for this. It's like, it was like cream of the crop, like top notch demonstration that could be for, in a master plan community. And so that, you know, all of that came together and it was like, okay, we need to put this together. So let's try and raise a little bit of money to do this. So, we actually had, a student at Florida State, who participated in that little round. We had some of my other team members, their family and some of their family friends participated. And then my family as well participated in the round. So it was a small, it wasn't like we weren't raising for stability of the company. It was raising just to get that demonstration done. And we were able to build everything we needed to build for the demonstration. We got our first ground control hub developed and built for that demonstration. We had our first real deal vehicle that, you know, could carry defibrillators effectively and easily. And, you know, with that, we were able to put everything together and do that demonstration. And during that demonstration, we had Jacksonville Magazine. We had
Orlando Business Journal. We had, I'm pretty sure, Jacksonville Business Journal. We had four different news stations came out. We had two different newspapers come out. We got a ton of press all around that, which was huge. So we really were able to take that small bit of family friends round and just light it on fire, really. Like, I guess that's not, okay, that's a bad, that's a bad analogy, but we were able to really, really thoroughly utilize it, not only to build a prototype, but use that prototype for demonstration directly for a potential huge client, directly for all these media outlets. And it was just this big, it was like the most effective way we could have possibly used the money. And I think that that's really what led into us, the ability for us to find that money was to actually really have a legitimate reason for it and really use it to the best of its ability.
Wow. So that's pretty awesome. And from there, you were able to attract some big players like Google, and you guys are a Google partner startup. Well, how in the world does that work? What does that look like for entrepreneurs out there who are unfamiliar with how to partner with Google on something like this?
So we work with Google Cloud Platform. So GCP is the Google version of Amazon Web Services, basically. So there's AWS that does all their Amazon, that's all Amazon's like cloud computing and their IoT platforms and blah, blah, blah. And then Google has a version of that, which is GCP. And GCP is great. It's a very effective platform. We run the way our architecture works is we have like six or seven different microservices that are running at any given time to help handle all the inputs and the outputs and moving the data and collecting the activation processes and blah, blah, blah. But everything is run on GCP now. So GCP has a startup program that you have to be internally nominated for through Google, and then they accept you into the program, and then they have different tiers of the program. And so we were accepted into the tier that afforded us $20,000 worth of GCP credit. So it's not cash, but it's $20,000 worth of cash in their platform, which is huge. Because initially when we built this, so Spencer is my lead developer and pretty much our CTO, and he's this absolutely brilliant guy, very hardworking, very, I can't say enough good words about Spencer. He's latched onto this project, and taken it under his wing. And he's been very, very effective at putting, a lot of the technical pieces together for us. But so basically we were initially running everything in two different instances on AWS because it was too big to run on one free. They have like a free structure on AWS. So we split it up into two of the free structures, I guess. That way we didn't have to pay for anything, and it was kind of all over the place and it was confusing. But since we got this GCP partnership with Google and they gave us that $20,000 worth of credit on the platform, now we were able to finally build everything in one place and keep it nice and neat. And have a development environment and have a production environment to where we don't have to, you know, we can have one thing running and it works well, and we can make tweaks on the other side and make sure the tweaks work before we put it into production. But yes, that's been a huge help from a development standpoint, because we are now actually on the platform. Everything is built. Everything is all in one place. Everything works well. And part of that partnership, we get a ton of, we have pretty much unlimited access to Google engineers. So anytime we have any kind of question about structure or architecture, or, you know, we're getting this error, why, we can talk directly to them pretty much as we need, which is great. So that's been a huge help. And it's also a big legitimizing piece, because you do have to be internally nominated and you do have to be accepted into it. And so to have, you know, them nominate us and then them review us and them accept us in, very validating for us, because there isn't any kind of life-saving unmanned air system deployment platform hosted on GCP right now. So they're pretty keen on pulling us in. And we're hoping to do some collaborative PR work with Google as well. For obvious reasons. But yes, it was a huge help for us.
Okay. I mean, so it sounds like you guys are getting some incredible traction. Talk to us about like where you guys are at now in terms of your business. Are you guys, you know, deploying drones out there or UASs? Are you guys raising capital? You know, what are you guys working on now?
Yeah, so our platform is built, which is great. That's the biggest thing. So the development is done, which is just, I don't know, after 4.5 years of pulling this thing together to see it all in place and be able to touch a button on a phone and watch a drone fly directly to you and drop an AED, it was just a big moment for me. But anyways, so we are currently working with a municipality to do a beta installation of one of our systems. So this will be our first actual installation of both the hardware pieces of our ground control hub, the hardware of the actual vehicle and the computer we have on the vehicle, and the entire back-end software that drives everything. So basically, like, the platform itself is the product, and then this, you know, the first response is one of the use cases of it, and we're going so far as to building out the hardware and kind of putting the whole thing together for somebody and giving it to them and saying, this is how it works, this is how you can use it. So we're working with a municipality right now to actually do an installation at a fire station and integrate the activation process directly into the 911 dispatch CAD system. So they have this like computer assisted dispatch system that when you call 911, like your coordinates pop into the system, and it's the dispatcher can type in information as you give it to them about what's going on, where, like, you know, your name, what, you know, if it's a cardiac emergency, whatever it is. And then from there, that information gets pushed over to the fire trucks or the ambulances or whoever it is that needs to be dispatched to the scene. So that computer-assisted dispatch system is really the core of what enables the communication between the actual dispatcher and, you know, the guy driving the fire truck or the guy putting the pants on and going out to the fire to help put out the fire or help save the person. So we're going to be working with this municipality to directly integrate our activation process right into that CAD system. So if the dispatcher is on the phone and they realize that John Doe is having a cardiac emergency and they need a defibrillator, that dispatcher will be able to just click on their screen, like deploy unmanned unit or deploy, you know, unit 42 unmanned or whatever they're going to title it for whatever station it's at. And the system will automatically just open up from the fire station, take off from the fire station and fly directly to that scene, decrease its altitude and deliver its payload. So basically we're, you know, enabling these dispatchers and these EMS stations to be able to deploy very, very quickly directly to a scene, this equipment. So we're really excited to be working with these municipalities and integrating directly, not only directly into the CAD system itself, but also into like the training side of training these dispatchers of what it's like to click this button, like why, when and why to click this button. And then also training the actual staff on what it looks like to have one of these units in play. So that's a huge, huge piece for us. And we're really excited to be working on this beta install directly with the municipality because we'll also be covering, you know, over 40 square miles in under 6 minutes, I'm pretty sure, of support. And that's in rural area. It's like a lot of it's trails, walking trails, biking trails, camping areas. And then another side of it is a city. So it's going to be kind of the best of both worlds for this beta install. We're going to be learning a lot from it, and we're going to be demonstrating the effectiveness of these systems. So that's a huge deal for us. So that's kind of what we got going on right now. That's our main focus is this beta install. We're also working with UCF's College of Medicine to do a white paper research study on that beta install. So that's going to be really cool as well. So not only are we learning a bunch, but we're also going to have UCF College of Medicine doing a in-depth research on that actual install to validate its, you know, efficiency in that scenario. And we're going to have a lot of data coming off of it, and it's going to be, you know, a full white paper written on it. So it's going to be a lot of detail. It's going to be really, really awesome. So we're really looking forward to that as well. And then also we just onboarded a new CFO, John Waterman. He's this really kick-ass dude out of Tampa. So that's a big update for us. And we're also we're fundraising as well right now. So those are kind of the things we have on our horizon.
Holy moly, you guys are really really working on a lot. So so you guys are doing your first install and with a fire department, which is incredible, being able to cover 40 square miles in under 6 minutes. So that's awesome. And you're currently fundraising. So for entrepreneurs out there, you know, listening in, you started with a grant, or you started with your own money, right? You got a grant while working at school. You did a friends and family round. You got some software and some services donated to you through Google as a Google partner. Now you're fundraising. What does that look like, as a startup? What's that look like? Explain that, what that looks like to entrepreneurs out there.
Yeah. So do you more so mean kind of like what, like why we're fundraising, or more so like the process of what does it look like to fundraise on an actual seed round?
Yeah. Let's talk more about the, what's it look like for a founder to fundraise. I think everybody, I hope everybody understands that it takes money to build things and grow companies and pay salaries and, you know, buy food, because we all love to eat. Right. So
yeah, eating is cool.
Let's skip that. Eating is cool. Let's go to more of the process of that. And then as we kind of get towards the end of the show today, I have a few more questions to ask, because I think you're doing some amazing stuff. And I'm glad you explained what you're doing, because this is really incredible. So what does the process look like for a founder to go fundraise?
Yeah, so it's tricky. I mean, it's definitely a process. And it's crazy to me initially, because I was like, this is how it works. You have a great idea. It's an amazing idea. You go tell people about it and you just get money. Like, that was like my stupid, naive, like college brain 4 years ago. And that's how I thought, like, this is how it's going to work. But that's not the case. It's very, you have to have, first of all, obviously you have to have everything in line. Like, you have to know what you're doing. You can't go in with like a general idea of what your company is and like, this is how it's going to play out. Like, you literally have to have everything to a T. So you got to know, exactly not only like how you're doing it, but also like your timeline, your workflow. What does your team look like? Literally, like, okay, if I were to write you a check this second, like, what, like, you have to know exactly every step. So, and that's definitely an obvious side of it. What's one thing, or one tricky thing for us, is that a lot of the, so I've pitched to dozens and dozens of venture capital firms, angel investors, institutional funds, family offices. I've pitched to a lot of people. And what for us, the biggest challenge is what every single person has said, almost every person has said, is you're too early. You're too early for us. A lot of institutional funds and a lot of venture capital firms want to see traction. They want to see paying customers, and they want to see revenue. And for us, that's really tricky, because we're not like a retail product where we can just like make a MVP and like sell a couple units or whatever it is and show like people are buying it, and now we want to like ramp up sales. We're very much like if we put a system in, it's going to be used in a life or death situation. So it can't be an MVP. It has to be like a real deal, finalized. Everything is perfect, no mistakes, flawless system, because someone will die otherwise. So we're a very unique situation in that we can't just get a couple sales and figure it out from there. It's like, we have to, everything has to be flawless. We're a B2B company, so we're not like selling to the end, like the person who's having cardiac arrest, the person that's going to get the defibrillator. That's not who we're selling to. We're selling to municipalities, we're selling to homeowners associations, we're selling to entities. We're not selling to individual consumers. So that's another challenge for us. So a lot of venture capitalists and a lot of angel investors and institutional funds want to see that traction. So my advice to anybody out there who's fundraising, if you can, try and get some traction. So what we did is with our demonstration that we did a year ago today, we got as much like media traction as we could. Like if you Google Archer First Response System, we're the first selection on the first like three pages. We're every selection on the first three pages. And we did that like, and we didn't pay for any SEO. Like that was just like organic media traction that we got from doing demonstrations. So like that was one way that we could show some kind of traction, some kind of, you know, market acceptance, without actually making sales. It was by showing that people can latch on to this concept and it is something that is needed. But so that's been a big challenge for us. Another piece, is having a good team and obviously a good product. Obviously having a good product is one of the biggest things. There are those crazy products that just happen to just pop, like the Snuggie or whatever. But having a good solution, a technologically sound solution to solving an actual problem is another big piece of it. And then having a team behind you that can execute, is another huge piece. So if someone were to cut us a check right now, like we have the team in place to execute right now. But I wouldn't go around fundraising, or trying to raise money without, having that team in place. Like I wouldn't go into a meeting saying, okay, well, if we get, you know, if you want to fund us this, we'll go and hire this person and that person. You have to have that person and this person in place first. Because it also, what I've learned is it shows that like if someone's willing to work on your team before you're funded, it shows that whatever that you're doing has to have some merit to it. Otherwise people wouldn't get behind it. So if you can build a team, and you can rally people behind you before you have funding or before you have revenue in the door, it really shows that what you're doing carries, it has merit to it. It carries value. So that's another huge piece of it. And that's something that I think has been a big help for us is having the support we've had, this is amazing. We had a UX designer, Linda Massey. She's this insanely talented, UX designer. And I was talking to her at an Orlando Tech and Beer meetup, which I'm sure we'll touch on in a second. We kind of met through Orlando Tech and Beer. And I just introduced the product to her and the project to her. And I was like, yeah, if you ever want to help. And she like mocked up this huge like app mockup of this entire mockup of the entire mobile application for us, like no cost, nothing. And it's like people like that will just come in and be like, this is a kick-ass project. I just want to help out. And they'll do that. And it's amazing. It's amazing what'll happen when you have a great product. And when you have people that'll get behind it like that, it's really validating, I guess. But yeah. Long-winded answer again. I'm sorry.
No, I could tell. We can all hear the passion and the excitement that you're doing this year. I mean, you are on a mission to build a business and save lives. So you mentioned Orlando Tech and Beer. Why don't you tell us what that is and tell us some of the things that you're involved in the community? Because not only are you building your own company, but you're helping build a community of entrepreneurs here in Orlando. So why don't you tell us about OTAB and a little bit about what you've got going on there?
So when I left Tallahassee, I came to Orlando and I was like, I have to dive headfirst into the startup scene here. Like I got to get involved in the community. Like that's just core number one. You got to just get involved. You got to show up. So I did some searching on Twitter to find what was going on. And I think I found Orlando Tech and Beer on Twitter. I met Tommy and Tommy Blevin and Josh Sutton through Twitter, actually. And I messaged them. I was like, hey, like, what's going on here? Can I help out? And they're like, yeah, you can definitely help out. Like, come to one of the Orlando Tech and Beers. I think it was the second one that I went to. I met Tommy and I met Josh, and kind of explained what I was doing. And they're like, awesome. If you want to help out with this community, like let us know. And I was like, heck yeah, I want to help out as much as I can. So Tommy kind of brought me in and introduced me to the general concept of Orlando Tech and Beer, which is like no motive at all organization to just simply connect and help the entrepreneurial and tech community to innovate and collaborate. And like, that's it. It's like, there's no alternative motives. There's no nothing. It's just straight up. Like, we want to build a community. We want to help out. And that's what we're going to do. So I got involved with Orlando Tech and Beer, and I'm one of the community organizers now. And so I help put on, so we have a monthly networking event the last Thursday of every month. We also have a, what we call a power lunch, which is the third Wednesday of every month. And we basically bring in guest speakers to come in and talk and just provide insight to the community. So if anybody's interested, we provide lunches, we get sponsors, we have lunches provided on for the Wednesday power lunches. People just come in, we eat pizzas usually, we talk and we have a guest speaker and we learn a lot. And then we also have the networking events on Thursday, which has been a huge thing. I mean, it's literally like the entirety of the Orlando Tech community getting together in a super casual, like drink beer, eat tacos type setting to just hang out. And it's like, it's not one of those networking events where you're like, hi, like I'm this guy and I'm trying to get this. I mean, I don't know. It's very like laid back, chill. It's fun. Like I look forward to it every month because it's fun. At the same time though, when you get all the right people together having fun, like stuff just organically happens. Like you just organically meet people. Like I was saying earlier, the UX designer, Linda Massey, I met her somehow through the Orlando Tech and Beer Network. And it wasn't like, I was like, I need this, I need that. It was more just like, hey, like, what's up? I think she liked some of our LinkedIn posts. She just kind of was following the company for a little while. And then we just ended up chatting. And like in that organic conversation, it came up that she could potentially help us. And then like she did, she, you know, helped us out a ton. So, you know, I love that organization and I love that community because that's what comes of it. It's so organic. It's just like, let's all share a taco, share a beer and just like hang out and just see what happens. And amazing stuff has been happening from it. So anybody listening, I thoroughly suggest that you come on out and have a beer on OTAP. We usually get a lot of, we work with like Orange County breweries. So we get beer sponsors. Gringos Locos Tacos is a big sponsor of the events. We always have free food. Charlie Lewis's company, Blue Wave, is a big sponsor as well. And, you know, we just all, like I said, we get together, we have a beer, and we have organic conversation, and magic happens, and it's awesome.
Man, that's great. Yeah, so I went to one of these events and just the other night, and it was a blast. I'm definitely going to go to the ones in the future. It was a super relaxed environment. There was food there. There was beer and opportunities just to connect with other founders, other entrepreneurs. There were investors in the room. There were just some incredible people. So thank you guys for, you know, organizing that. And thank you for your involvement in that, Gordon. So Gordon, you are a rock star in the entrepreneurial community here. If people want to learn more about you or Archer First Response Systems or even OTAB, Orlando Tech and Beer, where could people go to find out and connect with you?
I am an open book, so people can just straight up give me a call. You can text or call me anytime. My number is 407-451-9464 if anybody needs it. Yeah, and also you can go on our website, archerfrs.com, or if you just Google Archer First Response Systems, like I said, we're like the first three pages, so you'll find us. And there's like a form there you can type in and fill out. It goes directly to my email, so it's basically emailing me. Or you can find me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, whatever. All the social things, you can find me, add me there. I do ask that if anybody adds me on LinkedIn, please like just include a note of like why. I get a lot of like just random ads, no note, and it drives me crazy. But yeah, so I mean, you can find us on the internet, you can find us on our website, on all social media feeds, or you can give me a call anytime.
Awesome. Well, Gordon, thank you so much for, you know, sharing this, for lifting up the community, for building incredible business that's going to save you know, a lot of lives. We appreciate what you're doing. So thank you for being on the show.
Perfect. Yeah, thanks for having me. And also, I just want to say, like, I can't say enough, you know, kind words and good things about what you're doing here in the city as well. You know, we're a growing community here, and having someone with a spotlight going around and shining it on, you know, individuals and entrepreneurs, and the community itself is a big deal. So I really appreciate what you're doing here, Josh.
Absolutely. It's a team sport. So glad to be a player team sport on the field. Yeah. So
well said.
Ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Thanks, man. So we're going to wrap up. This has been an awesome show. Ladies and gentlemen, listening into this this episode, reach out to Gordon at Archer First Response Systems or on LinkedIn, or heck, he gave you his phone number, man. Give him some encouragement. If you're an investor, you want to have a conversation with him about that, you know, he's an open book, and he's more than happy to show you the benefits of this. So, guys, I hope you have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening into the Orlando Entrepreneurs Show, and we'll listen and talk with you on the next episode. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.